This is the Horse Radio Network.
This is episode 59 of Horsemanship Radio, brought to you by Index Fund Advisors, IFA.com. Horsemanship Radio is a part of the family of the Horse Radio Network. And today we have a treat. We have three men and a horse on the radio. This is Debbie Laux, and you're listening to the Horsemanship Radio. Thank you for joining us. Horsemanship Radio airs on the 1st and the 15th of the month, and I have my producer, Jen, with me today. Hi, Jen.
Hello. I love how the show notes now have under who is producing the show, it just has E-N-N. So you
could
can
be
put
Jen.
Whichever one you need.
Could be Glenn. Could be Jen. And you guys are perfect. You're perfect. The perfect couple.
There we go.
I never know until you Skype me, which is really fun to have you on. And I knew, you know, I had a suspicion that when I said that we were going to have Ben Masters, star of Unbranded, on, and Nick Roldan, the leading American polo player, on, that maybe Jen would show up instead of Glenn.
You know, on so many levels. First, we have model quality, gorgeous polo player.
Yes,
and we have super adorable cowboy Ben Masters. That's one level.
So cute. Yeah.
Right. And then we have amazing horseman polo player.
Yes.
And amazing horseman cowboy. And then we have people who genuinely are influencing the perception of horses around the world.
Yes.
Polo player.
Yes.
And someone who is changing the perception of horses around the world. Ben, how could I not be here for this?
I am so glad you are. I know. I love that too. Yeah. The reluctant leaders a little bit. Now, Nick, the polo player, is not as reluctant. I mean, I think he gets it. He really, I mean, he is now a global ambassador for the Brook Animal Welfare Organization, which is now just expanded in the U.S. And he has, I mean, he's multi-generation polo player. So he gets that world travel, that global view of the world. I think he's won on five continents and really gets it. But I don't think he set out to be an influencer. I think he just loves polo and he loves the horses, which is, you know, my heart.
Right.
And then Ben may be more the reluctant influencer, as you say, because I think he set out to do a post-college flyer, you know, fun with the boys. I don't want to get married yet. You know, let's do something really fun. Yet digging into it, he really saw a cause behind it, which is pretty darn cool.
Yes. What started out as a post-college guy's final fling before they have to get serious and grow up, you know, it was their version of going to Europe and hitchhiking across Europe.
With backpacks. Yeah. It's road trip, but it's road apples trip.
Yes. Road apples trip. Yeah. And there's road apples. It's so, yeah, both literally and figuratively for those who have not seen Unbranded yet. That is interesting because Ben, as an influencer being someone who others listen to and take advice from, whether consciously or subconsciously, perhaps didn't start out as an influencer, but had realized early on in that process that he was going to become one and then really embraced it wholeheartedly. And the resulting film Unbranded is really getting people talking and getting people thinking. It's so fun to look at posts, thanks to online social media, how it's gotten people thinking. It's not all gold stars and sparkles, as I like to say. The people who talk about Unbranded, it's fantastic documentary. But it's not all gold stars and sparkles. And it's so cool to watch people talk about that and digest it and how they're taking it in and then applying it to their world.
Oh, yeah. I think there could be college courses taught on this thing with leadership, you know, the leadership qualities, the things they had to do to do Kickstarter campaign, I think they did. Oh, just, you know, you got to isolate on the donkey and the leadership lessons that Donkeeta teaches us.
Absolutely. The different horses and donkey in this case, the different horses are literally characters within the story and they all have different character traits that make them good at what they're doing or perhaps not so good at what they're doing. And and recognizing that, the human having to recognize that and say, we need to put that personality in a different place. so that they can thrive. You're right. I never thought of that. Another reason to watch it again.
See? Exactly. I mean, there's layers here, layers. Yeah. And it's fun because we brought Dad in. We brought Monty Roberts in to really usher this through in both cases, both with Nick and Ben. And, you know, he watched The Unbranded and he saw the layers in there too. And I think the fun part is that everybody will have their own take on, there's some things that are strongly opinionated, but not political. It's just, it's really pretty apolitical. It's pretty balanced. Yeah. But I think you'll pick those things that you think, oh, that just drove me crazy, or that was just so inspiring. And you know, I mean, it must be amazing for somebody like Ben to see people from New Zealand are seeing this film and opining, and people from Europe and just, you know, the four corners of the world. And here's this young man in Texas, you know, just kind of taking it all in. And we can't wait to see what he's going to do next.
I know, it's going to be a fascinating conversation. And then Nick is kind of the opposite end of the spectrum. He is someone who grew up around horses. Mm-hmm. He went into polo as a professional player, obviously very seriously. You don't become a professional polo player unless you're pretty darn serious about your sport.
Yeah.
His initiation into becoming an influencer was very different. Yeah. And yet here he is a few years later as a world-class polo player and discovering his role as someone who can improve the lot in life for humans and the equids that they work with by working with the brook. So it's going to be great stuff.
Good stuff. Let's get into it.
Hi, I'm Mark Hebner, president of Index Fund Advisors and proud owner of Monty Roberts Willing Partners graduate, He's a Sugar Bear. You know, investment portfolios are a lot like horses. You need to find one that best suits you, your temperament, and your stage of life. Some people might like an energetic horse and an aggressive investment portfolio, while others are more comfortable with a gentle ride and a more conservative investment portfolio. The trick is to find the one that's right for you. That's what Index Fund Advisors is all about, matching people with portfolios, risk-appropriate, low-cost, and globally diversified investment portfolios. You can find the right portfolio for you by taking the Risk Capacity Survey at ifa.com. That's IFA as an Index Fund Advisors. Or you can call us toll-free at 888-643-3133. That's 888-643-3133.
Ben Masters is the mastermind of the movie Unbranded. In 2010, he and two friends completed a 2,000-mile ride along the Continental Divide. They were broke at the time and adopted a few $125 Mustangs from the Bureau of Land Management to supplement their string of quarter horses. They were surprised to find that the Mustangs outperformed the domesticated horses. Intrigued, Ben Masters looked into the wild horse controversy and found a sad and complex situation. 50,000 unwanted wild horses in burrows, living in government-leased pens and pastures, and in need of permanent homes. He decided to do something about it. The Unbranded idea was born. Well, welcome. We've got Ben Masters and Monty Roberts on the line together. I'm so excited. Ben, where are you calling from?
I'm in Austin, Texas today.
Austin, Texas. And Monty, I think you're home.
I'm home in Solvang, California.
Nice to hear your voices. It is so fun to get both of you on the line. It's been a couple of months, I know, in the making. You have busy schedules. Ben Masters, as we've introduced you, is from the movie Unbranded, the documentary movie. And Monty Roberts is a world-renowned clinician, as you know. So for new listeners, we're really excited to put these two together because their common ground is wild Mustangs. And what woman doesn't want to hear about wild Mustangs from two men? I think that sounds awesome. So I'm just flabbergasted that you were able to put this together, Ben, and your team and the fundraising that you did and everything else too. And I think the theme for me was that experience comes from judgment. And you had a lot of judgment built into your experience as well. And I can't wait to hear you two talk a little bit about the making of and then the life lessons that came out of that. I'll start with Dad. Do you want to just jump in there and ask sure. Ben what you're thinking?
Sure. Let me just say first that, Debbie, you got it slightly different. It's mm-hmm. Judgment comes from experience.
I did that on purpose.
But experience comes from bad judgment.
That's right.
So we all want good judgment. And you know, Debbie, what I've always said about learning how to buy good horses. I don't know if Ben realizes this, but you have any suggestion for me, Ben, on how you go out there and buy good horses, just buy the good ones? Do you have any idea how you have to do that?
Well, you probably had to look through a lot of bad ones.
Exactly. You have to buy a lot of bad ones if you're going to try to buy a good one, because it needs to hurt your pocketbook when you get it wrong. And so my life has been led that way in competition and stuff. And Ben, the Mustangs have been my professors. They've been, you know, family members to me. My competition time went away in 1966. Was the last year I showed in competition, and I had 9 world championships during the course of my career in that field of Western horse competition. So watching you and your team go through these things was just a peak and valley experience all the way through, as you would have agreed, I think. And what would you do it again?
Absolutely. Let's go.
Okay.
That was the second time that I've done the trip. Well, not the exact same trip. I did the Continental Divide Trail in 2010 with a bunch of horses. But, I mean, it was amazing. I'm not going to say I loved every minute of it, because that would just be a downright lie. But, I mean, it was an incredible experience. It really was something I will never, ever regret doing. And I'm so thankful that it's still possible to do that kind of thing.
Oh, it's wonderful. Have you heard the name Shy Boy?
Remind me. I don't know if I'm familiar.
Well, Shy Boy is a Mustang, and he was gathered by the BLM and put up for adoption, as you well know that process. And the British Broadcasting Corporation adopted him and put him on a private land of 42,000 acres that had a little group of about 100 wild horses on it. They were privately owned wild horses. But he amalgamated on about a 30-day period. He amalgamated into that herd. And then I went out there boldly stating that I could cause him to stay with me, that we call it join up, while riding a horse. And that once I had him joined up, I could cause him to accept his first saddle and first rider in the wilderness with no fences or 20th century facilities of any kind. And that was, it wasn't a 6-month deal. It actually happened in about 36 to 72 hours, depending on where you want to draw the line. But yeah, I can't do that again. I'm 81 now, and my body wouldn't go through it again. It nearly didn't go through it in 97. So we have a lot in common here. Shy Boy is still alive. He's 22, and he's here with us. And he even has a captured nephew now, because we want some Mustang to be on this place as long as I'm here. And I just couldn't be more impressed with the mission that you were on. And I have a lot of thoughts about that mission. So, one of the things that I wrote down is your ability now to influence people about the value of these wonderful horses. And you also can influence people that they don't need to be trashed on and beat up in order to be partners with us. And I think you also would agree that you have influence in this business of saving open space and not building over every acre that we own in the United States, but to leave some natural stuff. I think you would agree with that.
It is. Yeah, it's kind of a strange thing that people are kind of, looking at me for advice and even leadership in a way, which is something that I'm relatively new to. And it's also a tremendous responsibility because, you know, these issues that we addressed in the film and, they're big issues with big consequences and, a lot of them are extremely complex.
Yeah. Well, it was so well done, and the camera work was fantastic. And you know that my life on the big screen started in 1939. I did my first stunt work as a four-year-old child, and then it went on through the 40s. And so I'm well aware of lighting and position of camera and everything, and you really, somebody put together a hell of a team from the videographic standpoint.
Yeah, we did. We did. I was extremely, I'm actually just a pretty lucky person in life, but really, really, really lucky to have met the director, Phil Baraboo, at a really early stage of Unbranded.
Uh-huh.
And we were able just to put together just an all-star team of production crew together. And, during the journey itself, I didn't really get to see a lot of the footage. We'd get to see bits and pieces here and there. You know, they would go back to the edit bay, put together some small pieces just so we could see that, yes, they were actually filming a movie. But the first time I actually got to see a rough cut, I was just blown away by how incredible of a job they did. And then, you know, watching it come together to the final version, I was, I don't know, you know, I'll take credit for Unbranded being my idea, but I never knew that it would be as good as it actually turned out. And, I attribute that really to Phil Baraboo, the director who gathered the team together and spearheaded the filmmaking process. I was very fortunate for that.
Well, that's great, Ben. And, you know, I want to know, have you spoken with Johnny after?
I have, yeah. Yeah, we've hung out quite a few times.
Okay, great. As an outside viewer, I was just mesmerized by the overwhelming influence that this could have, and I want my team to back your documentary to whatever extent we can. And I would also offer you a chance to come here anytime that I'm here and have calendar for it. I'd love to work with you on some ideas I have about Mustangs and also see the herd of wild deer that I work with here and recognize the fact that I am the only human being apparently on Earth to ever touch a wild deer who has never been in captivity at all. You can raise them on a bottle and they get to be very gentle, deer do. But if they're raised in the wild, it is said by the scientists that you can't touch them. And of this group of 24 currently, it's 24 in this family group, I've touched 14, rubbed on 14 of the 24. And, you know, there's a lot of commonality between what you did and the use of Mustangs and the deer, which are about 100 times more sensitive than the Mustangs are. So I'm still learning, Ben, and I'm here to pass on to you any information I can, because you have now placed yourself in a position to be influential for the balance of your time in the handling of horses and other things, the ecology and the whole business that you came through, and even the psychological aspects of getting along with one another or not. How does that work? And the alpha man somebody has to run the show, and it was your idea, so you were the alpha man, and that's good. It's not always easy to fulfill that, but you have placed yourself in a position where you now have a responsibility. And you can throw that responsibility away, or you can make the most of it. And I've had such an unbelievable life myself, and I call myself the luckiest man in the world. And yet I've had some tremendous challenges. So I think there's a lot of synergy going on between the two of us.
No pressure. As far as your invitation to come out to California, I would absolutely love to, and see the deer herd. That would be, yes, I accept your invitation. I'm in.
Awesome.
Okay. Well, you know who I considered the star of this documentary, don't you?
The donkey.
Yes.
Did you have the donkey or Val? And my guess is Val.
Uh-huh. Well, that's all right. But this donkey, I loved her. It was a female, wasn't it?
It was, yes.
Yeah. I fell in love with her because she so brilliantly fills in the blanks for me, whereby I say, don't tell the horse what they have to do. I say, create an environment in which the horse wants to do it. And that stops the line of discipline or violence that you see typically in the traditional methods. And I get laughed at and my life gets threatened and everything. And you will have your people who challenge you and say, you know, everything you're doing is wrong. But if I can help you through, I believe I've, you know, paved a path for you to travel that where you can handle those critics and call them to be your best friend, because they'll keep you getting up in the morning and learning more about your discipline. What do you plan to do with your life now in terms of every day getting along with this thing called life?
You know, I'm in a very fortunate position that I've had a lot of doors open up for me through Unbranded. And, you know, I believe my calling is really towards the storytelling aspect of it. I've seen what Unbranded has done, which is, you know, raise a bunch of money for the Mustang Heritage Foundation, raise a lot of awareness for wild horse adoptions. But, you know, every single day I get emails about people saying, you know, I watched your film and decided that I'm going to, you know, stop putting off this big adventure, this big dream that I've had, and I'm going to do it this summer, or I'm going to start planning for it. I'm going to do it now. And, you know, for me, that just means so much that, you know, one of the messages that's in the film of, you know, getting out and really living life to the fullest, people are really connecting with that.
Sure.
And I just think that there is power in the documentary. I think that it has a lot of ability to influence people and to inspire people. So I want to replicate that with more documentaries, more films. I'm also writing quite a bit. So, you know, I'm looking forward into the future of my life, you know, as a filmmaker, possibly as a character again, but just trying to tell stories that I believe are important and should be told and will make the world a better place. So that's kind of where I'm headed.
Well, my word, how that folds into my mission in life. And, now that I'm 81, I'm looking to those of you that are in their 20s and 30s to carry this message on. I'd love to work with you a few days here and just open some doors for you to think about things that I've come up with that have worked very well for me.
I'd like to do that. Thank you.
Yeah, good. I have a lot of students out there, and there you are in Texas right now. And they just had the world greatest contest there. Do you know about that?
Which contest are you referring to?
Yeah, it's called the World's Greatest Horseman Championship. And it's really just for Western, because they ask you to do reining, working cow horse, cutting, roping, two different styles of roping, in the 4 or 5 days. And one of my students won it twice in a row. And this past one just finished a couple of weeks ago. And I had two students in the top 10. One was Philip Rawls and the other one was Ron Emmons, both in the top 10. And Philip was raised here on this farm and he's been second 2 years in a row. I got to go to work on him to get the tops one filled in. But it's been, I think, all my world championships aside, what I do for people is the greatest gift to me. It's so gratifying to help people. And you've placed yourself in a position where you're already off the launching pad and headed for this type of thing that I'm talking about. And anything I can do to help it, I will.
Well, I'll take you up on that offer. I would absolutely love to come out to California and meet in person and try to learn from you, because I have no doubt that I have room for improvement with my horsemanship.
Yeah, where's your gray horse right now?
Gray horse is in Springer, New Mexico. I've actually kind of stopped using him.
Yeah.
He's kicked quite a few people, like 10 people. And then, he's done a couple times he's gotten into a bind and just, falls down hills, which is a pretty, you know, not safe thing to do. And he flipped over backwards on me and, landed on my leg pretty hard. And so I kind of stopped using him just because I've got a lot of really good horses that I feel very comfortable around. And he also has a tendency to like kick people that walk behind him for no reason. It's pretty poor behavior.
Yeah. Well, I can understand that. It came over well on the documentary though, I think, and seemed like one of the equine leaders, you know. And something was said, Ben, by the elderly gentleman, really nice guy, I have to tell you, as he came across on the screen, that was driving the truck and all that stuff. And he made a statement, not to burden you with that statement. Maybe you don't agree with it at all. But that man, what was his name?
His name is Val Geisler.
Yeah, Val Geisler, that's right. And in talking about the Mustangs, he said, as soon as you get comfortable, that's when you'll get hurt. When you relax, that's when they'll hurt you. And my opinion is it's exactly the opposite. It doesn't mean that you need to get in a dreadful position where the horse has a chance to hurt you. You try to stay out of that position. But relaxation, low pulse rates, and low adrenaline levels, horses try to mimic that. They try to be that synchrony with you. And they do that because of nature teaching them that the predator generally has a higher pulse rate and they can feel it for 100 yards. So I'd like to talk to you about that and have you watch Mustangs go pleasant and quiet when the handler is pleasant and quiet, and the opposite when the handler is allowing the adrenaline to go up. So I believe you can relax and be comfortable. You just have to be in the right place at the same time.
Right. I think that's where he was going. I think maybe a better word would have been careless, you know.
Maybe, oh, yeah.
Maybe whenever you get careless and, you know, walk around in areas that you're not, you know, where you can get kicked, or, you know, being careless, you drop something on the ground, or, you know, I think that's what he meant by relax. But let's go ahead though. I'd love to pick your brain on it.
Yeah. And, you know, that in front of public audiences, I've now done 11,000 horses. It's been going on for 27 years. And my horse count is about 70,000 that I've worked with. And so I've had, just this past July, in other words, about 8 months ago, I had the sixth kick of my life. And that's all breeds and everything I've done. The sixth time I've been kicked, which I think is pretty low percentage-wise. But I got kicked by a Mustang, And I got a little bit careless because he was going so well. And I was relaxed, and he was too. But I did the wrong thing by trying to put a piece of leather in its keeper, and it tickled him or something, and he just jumped and kicked me right in the ribs. And they said nothing was broken, but 6 months later, they found 3 broken ribs there. They hadn't opened up when they did the first x-ray. But you can get kicked, and you can get struck, as the young man that pulled the thorns out of that horse's nose will agree. You can get struck before God gets the news. And I often say the front legs will kill you, the back legs will just hurt you, but they can kill you from either end if they really get a shot at you. But that's part of the challenge that we have, isn't it? And it doesn't mean that we send amateurs in to work with Mustangs on a regular basis. But I have a course here called Gentling Your Wild Horse, and I take some pretty green people up the ladder, and I haven't had any injuries yet, so except that one to myself. But we try to be careful, but we try to be... So I look forward to meeting you and seeing you again, not on the screen, but in person. And
I hear a screening coming. I think it would be fun to have you out, Ben, and maybe coordinate a screening of Unbranded at the same time so we can promote it in the San Ynez Valley, which has so many horse representations there with so many breeds. It's like 22 different championships of breeds of horses in the San Ynez Valley. So it'd be a fun place to put Unbranded right in the middle of, and then we can be your host too.
Yeah, that'd be terrific.
Wouldn't that be fun?
Have you been here to San Ynez, Ben?
No, I haven't. It'd be my first time.
Yeah, do you know about it at all?
I know where it is, but I don't know a lot of the history, or I've never spent time there.
Yeah, well, Ron Rawls won 2 in a row of that World's Greatest Thing, and he was I got him when he was 30. Here, and he was a buckaroo on top of the mountain out of Bakersfield, and now he's one of the best in the world, and it just goes on and on. Jason Davis and Zane Davis both travel down the road with me, and I have a young lady right at the moment that's learning, mentoring under me, and she's from Wales, from Cardiff in Wales, and the improvement that I'm seeing on her is just off the charts, and She's only been with me a short period of time. So, I don't know. This is my mission now, because I have been thrust into a position of influence on the world. And South America is changing because of me like gangbusters. And it's all very exciting. And you certainly have placed yourself to be an enormous influence in this area.
Mm-hmm. Well, I certainly... don't want to even be associated with my horsemanship being as good as yours. But I do appreciate the compliment, and I'm going to continue to work on it. And I do really look forward to getting to know you better and hopefully getting to spend some time. And, I'd like to haul out one of my horses and work with you. And let's do it. Let's set up the screening and get it in the schedule.
All right. I'm the person you book with. Here we go. It was great.
Right.
Yeah, great to get you guys together. Thank you. And I think this is just the start of something big. It'll be really fun to have you there. And Ben, you're going to hear all kinds of accents on the farm and everything, because people come from world over to just all get together and brain pool on these terrific horses. Whether they're Mustangs or whether they're big old warm bloods from Germany, it doesn't really matter. They all are horses. They all speak the same language. And it sounds like you two do too.
Yeah, it's great synergy, and I'm all for it. Let's get together and do something. It'd be a good cause.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Ben. Thank you, Dad, for joining us today on Horsemanship Radio.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having me too, Debbie.
All right.
Thank you.
Talk at you soon.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Nice to meet you, Monty. Take care.
We're really excited because Sean's Omega Fields company has done something amazing for one of our test horses. His name is Cadillac. And we felt so strongly about it that we definitely wanted to bring him on as a sponsor of Horsemanship Radio. And we wanted you to know that it came in that order first, is that we were so impressed with this product and with this horse's results that we wanted to have him a part of our monthly shows. What is it about the Omega Fields product? Something's different.
Omega Fields was built around a really unique and proprietary technology. Flaxseed has been known for a long time to contain rich source of omega-3 fatty acids along with omega-6 and omega-9 fatty acids in a near-perfect balance. But historically, there was a problem using it. It's high in fat, and when it was milled into a feed product or a food product, it would go rancid very quickly. So our company had developed a proprietary technology for stabilizing this high-fat flaxseed to make it usable, give it a long shelf life in a natural environment. We don't use any chemicals or additives to extend the shelf life or anything like that. It's a completely natural process. That's what makes our flax really different. It makes it usable. It makes it nutritious over a long period of time. We guarantee an 18-month shelf life, so consumers can use it with confidence without it going rancid that, you know, would potentially harm the horse. So quality of manufacture, every single thing in that product, Omega Horseshine, is food grade. It's made at a food grade facility with great care of product quality. The stabilization technology makes that omega-3 nutritional value locked in and usable for a long period of time. So proof is in the pudding, so to speak, that it really works. You'll see dramatic results in a fairly short period of time.
Nick Roldan is often referred to as the face of American polo. Nick's philanthropic involvement as team captain in charity tournaments is widely recognized, as is his modeling career. His particular chosen charities are Kids Cancer Foundation and the Brook Animal Welfare Organization. He's dedicated to popularize the sport that he loves with a wider audience of younger players and new spectators. He's a fourth-generation professional polo player. He is at present the leading American polo player with an impressive 8-goal handicap rating, with his sights set on the supreme 10-goal status. He's won on all 5 continents at every goal level, and he's also the youngest polo player in the world to win the prestigious U.S. Polo Open title at a ripe old age of 15. Nick is currently captain of the American polo team. Well, welcome, Nick Roldan and Monty Roberts. I've got you both on the line. I'm so impressed with both your backgrounds and my ability to get 20 minutes out of the two of you, world travelers. How are you both?
Well, I'm fine.
I'm very well, thank you.
Good.
This is Monty here.
Yeah. And Nick is in Wellington, Florida. Nick, are you at a polo match?
I'm at a polo match right now, yeah, and everything's great here. It's sunny and the weather's nice and we're dry, so I can't complain.
And Monty?
I'm in Salinas, California, the town of my birth, and I've just come from the rodeo grounds or the competition grounds where I was born, and they have a golf driving range on the polo field. You'll be sad to hear, Nick,
but
they moved. Yeah, they moved the polo over to Pebble Beach near Carmel way back when I was just a child. So the polo field's been gone for a long time. But I'm on a nostalgic sort of trip going back over my history.
Mm. Oh, great. That sounds beautiful.
Yeah, it does. And it's a beautiful area, too. So all those people in Minnesota, cover your ears because they're both in beautiful areas right now. But we are in midwinter as we record this. But I wanted to get people familiar with you, Nick, a little bit. And I did a bit of an introduction, but I would love to hear what it's like from somebody who at age 15 became the youngest player to win the U.S. polo title with a team, and you are based in Wellington, Florida, so you really are the face of American polo, and we want to hear about that because we're going to talk about horses next, but I want to hear about what that experience has been like for a young man.
Yeah, so I grew up in Wellington. My mother and my father father from Argentina, mother from Germany. Moved here back in 1979. And my father, so I'm a third generation polo player. My father played and his grandfather played polo professionally. So, you know, sport has been something that's always been in the family. I grew up on a farm and I've been riding since I was, you know, probably 2 or 3 years old. And, like in any polo family, you know, the first thing they do before you can walk is strap a polo stick to your hand. So, it's been something that has come natural. And, you know, I'm obviously feel very blessed to be able to play polo. It's an amazing sport. And I'm luckily was able to grow up in Wellington, which is the Mecca for polo in the United States. We host some of the biggest tournaments in the United States. And, I started at a young age and continued, playing, continued playing at all the kids polo till I was about 14 years old. And was very lucky to get an opportunity to play a tournament called the U.S. Open, which is our most prestigious tournament in the United States, and probably yes. Second or third in the world.
Yes.
I was 15 years old, and we that was my first professional tournament, and we ended up winning it. So that was sort of the kickoff of my career, and decided that was what I wanted to do, and you know, here I am today. So.
Yeah, with over 20 goal tournaments to your name, and I think it's another 10 at the 26 goal level. That's an amazing repertoire. Yes,
I'm humbled.
Yeah, it's been a great career. You know, it's been exciting. It's been a great experience, and you know, the great thing about the sport of polo is you get to travel to a lot of the most beautiful places in the world, and you're I'm doing what I love. I mean, my horses has always been a passion of mine. Since I was a little kid, I've been around them since forever. So horses are my life, and, I feel very lucky and humbled to be able to play polo as a profession.
Well, I've got a couple of things to say about what he said, Debbie.
One of them
certainly is that U.S. Open wasn't a kickoff of his career. It was a home run on the first trip. That is just unbelievable. And the other thing is that don't be talking to us, me at 80, about this being a wonderful career. It's a wonderful career so far, my man, and you've got a lot of years in front of you. And my watching Joe Baker and Memo Gracida and bless his soul Carlos out here in California during my years recent when they started to bring me the breakers up here and come to my place and start to alter the way the horses are broken in Argentina to become polo ponies. It tells me that you have the opportunity to have a very long career. And I think now that the horses are doing it because they love to and not because they're forced to, that you're going to find a safer game as well. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, the sport in itself has changed. Obviously, I mean, you have experience of I mean, Joel is a great friend of mine and a legend in the sport. And, you know, we've worked together and he's coached a couple of the teams, the national teams that I've played on. So he's a great friend. And Memo and Carlos were the guys that we beat Memo and Carlos in that finals in 1998. And then that for the rest of the year, I went and played with them. So, you know, I tend to think that, you know, they were a huge attribute and a big help to my career. And I look up to those guys, and obviously those are, you know, close friends of yours. And obviously it was a big shame to lose a dear friend, Carlos. Regarding the sport, but it's, you know, the sport has changed. The horses are becoming, you know, they're getting better and better. The quality of horses and their performance is just insane. And the sport of polo is growing more and more and becoming more and more competitive. And horse flesh is key. I mean, you know, everyone, you know, basically the teams with the best horses are going to win. and it's become a vital part of the winning team. So,
well, you have no idea how gratifying it is to hear those words from you. I would ask you, were you in Argentina as a child to see the old traditional ways of breaking the polo ponies?
You know, I grew up in the United States, but we would go back to my father's from Argentina, and we would go back every year. So I did get to see a little bit of that. I wasn't born into that because obviously things were done a little bit differently here. But it was pretty amazing to be able to experience both aspects, both in Argentina and here and in the United States.
Joe brought the Gracitas and Cambiaso to me years back, and when I first started dealing with them, Nick, they didn't have any thoroughbred stallions down there because they went all native horses, and they said that the thoroughbred just couldn't handle it, that those thoroughbreds, when you breed them in, they all died during the breaking process. And I showed them what I showed.
You'd be surprised. Now, 80% of the horses in polo are thoroughbreds.
But that's what I'm talking about. I showed them my concept. Yep. They went nonviolent. And all of a sudden,
right.
Memo and Carlos both were taking thoroughbred horses and Cambiaso too, down there and breeding that thoroughbred blood into them, and suddenly they're going faster and smoother and doing a better job, and they weren't killing them. So,
right. Well, look, you yourself more than anyone in the world knows how to break horses and of all different sorts. So, and obviously a thoroughbred is a little bit more of a delicate horse, but it's definitely. You know, I think a lot of Argentines have come to find out that a good thoroughbred, there is nothing better than a good thoroughbred horse. And, you know, I think there isn't an Argentine that's playing polo right now that doesn't have a thoroughbred on their string. So,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Nick, I was reading that each month on social media that you highlight one of your horses, and that's a pretty popular thing. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, you know, I was working, with Natasha on trying to, the sport of polo is such a beautiful sport, and we're starting to get a lot of publicity and a lot of attention. But you know, most importantly, the horses for me are our form of living. You know, they're our workhorse, and they're. They're the ones that are taking us on the field and help us to be what we are. 80% of the sport is horses. So, and a lot of times I don't feel like the horses get enough credit. So we decided to do every month to just pick one of my horses and just give them a little bio on, you know, where it's from, its breed, what it does, you know, why I like it so much, maybe what best play ponies it's won. Just to kind of, to get the horses, to make the horse a little bit more famous as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. And it's even led. Yeah, isn't that cool? And it's led to rethinking some of the designs of the polo saddles, and you're working on the horse's comfort and I suppose athleticism when you do that too. So.
Yeah, I mean, the sport hasn't changed in, I don't know, in 30, 40,
years.
50, 50 years, you know, exactly. You know, we're still using the same sticks. It's the same methods. It's the same sort of, and so the whole reasoning for creating the saddle came through that. I was working with my chiropractor and a vet, and, we sort of analyzed the season and what sort of injuries or where horses were more sore. And I mean, it's a very physical sport, the sport of polo, and we ask a lot from the horses. And what we were realizing that a lot of times the saddles were, first of all, being placed in the wrong positions on the saddle, on the withers, and they were putting pressure in the wrong places. So we designed a saddle called the Polo Gear, the Free Shoulder Elite Saddle, and basically it alleviates a lot of pressure on the withers, and it gives the horse a lot more mobility, and it cuts back on it helps in recuperation of the horses, and it makes them less sore. We've gotten a lot of results, and it's a great saddle, and it's comfortable, awesome. And it puts the players in the right position, and it's good. It's kicking off. You know, we've been working for about 4 years on this.
Good.
And, like everything yeah. that you know, like everything, it takes a little bit of time for people
sure.
to understand it. Which has been the toughest part, is trying to educate a lot of guys that are usually stuck on their old ways and don't like to change things. So. But,
yeah, well,
it's been exciting. Yeah.
Does that happen? Yeah.
That's my life, yeah. man. That's my life. Yeah.
Right? I mean, I can imagine.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I saw some of those moves you did up in the saddle, Nick, and I think you're going to need a saddle that, stays up there.
I'm telling you, we do a lot of moving on the saddle.
Absolutely.
Well, the very nature of the sport is demanding on the equine anatomy, and the happier we can keep our horses on the field, the better, more goals we're going to score. And the better
100%.
Yeah, and the better bred they are, the more likely they are to love to do it. Mm-hmm. So
right. Exactly.
It's so gratifying, because my life's goal is to leave the world a better place than I found it, for horses and for people too.
Right.
And when they brought me the Gracitas and Adolfo, and certainly Joel's inclusion there, it just was an opportunity for me to go to the highest level of a discipline and make a difference. And I have to tell you, Nick, there are many disciplines where they don't want to hear from me. They want to continue the old ways, you know?
Right, right. Yeah, I know. That's tough.
I have a difficult time with show jumping and dressage. And oftentimes they say, you can say I'm wrong, but you can't say my daddy was wrong. We'll do
right.
things the way we've done them. And you know, everything gets better or it doesn't move. And the Wright brothers didn't have tradition holding them back.
Mm-hmm.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. Correct. Well,
yeah, yep. And you know, so. I wanted to bring up too that you two run in some fair highbrow circles, and that you might not know, but Nick has been fortunate enough to play with various members of the royal family, and Monty has a little relationship there too. Has that been some fun, Nick?
Yeah, it's that's one of the perks of being able of playing polo, is you get to play with some very honorable people. So it's been, those have been some fun experiences.
Yeah, that Prince Harry, he's a wild man though, isn't he?
He's a wild man, but he's, they're both great guys, and, they're a lot of fun, and,
it's
very impressive what they do. And, they've really done a great job with their charities and trying to keep the polo going in the family. So,
Yeah. Well, Nick, you know, my goal is to have Harry and Wills play on a U.S. team, all for the benefit of my military clinics that I do here in the United States for post-traumatic stress people. I do them in the United States, in Australia, and in England, and we'll get that done at some point, but they're just the family has just been so good to me. I couldn't pay them back in three lifetimes, so I'm just trying to do everything I can to show them how much
that's
I appreciate
great,
it.
Buddy, and that's great.
Yeah,
we'll have to
have
Nick on the team. I think Nick will have to be there. Yeah.
Well, he has to be there.
Yeah.
And you know, we have to have people like the Gracitas and stuff, that we'd have to get the horses right. I'd like to do the Orange Bowl. I'd like to do the Rose Bowl out here first, and then set up a charity event for the post-traumatic stress sufferers of the United States, England, and Australia. And there's a lot of Australian players, as you well know, and they're very anxious to do it, but those kids stay busy, and I've got to keep working on getting it done.
Yeah, that's great. Do you know around what time of the year you're wanting to do it? Have you thought about that at all, or is that still a bit early.
Nick, I don't even know what year I want to do it. I just want to do it whenever I can.
Right.
But I've got the agreement of Peter Uberoth here in California, who ran the most successful Olympics ever held, and he's agreed to do this if the royal family will back it. You know, so.
Right.
I would like for Charles to come over and sit on the sidelines or something.
That would be great.
I know, and I would love the Queen to come over, but she doesn't travel that much anymore. But I think one of the big airlines would probably provide her with one plane. She could stay in bed the whole time and just make a little wave, you know.
Right.
Nick, we literally could raise $10 or $15 million for post-traumatic stress people if we did something like that. We would fill up the Rose Bowl out here, and then we could go to the Orange Bowl, or we could go to New York or wherever. We can make a polo field out of almost anything, because it doesn't have to be a regulation field for this kind of a game.
Of course,
you know?
We can make it a smaller field. Yeah, that would be amazing.
Yeah.
Well, anything I can do to help, I'm here to support you, so.
That's
awesome. And Debbie, what's the name of the young lady that came to me with the problem with her polo horse?
Oh, Isabella. Wolf.
Isabella, do you know Isabella?
Isabella.
What's Wolf? Her last name?
Wolf. Uh huh. That's right.
Wolf. Yeah, I know Isabella. Yeah, I know Isabella Wolf. Yeah.
Well, say hello. Great. Say hello when you see her. She's a sweet girl, and she came to me with a horse with some big problems with it, and we got really lucky. So I think she'll be happy to hear my name spoken.
Yeah, I hope
that's
she's
great.
Doing.
She's here in Wellington, so I'll be sure to remind her and see her.
Good. Okay. Ask her how Cha-Cha is. Cha-Cha was the little horse
Cha-Cha.
That we worked with that couldn't be caught. Yeah, and we couldn't let you go without telling a little bit about your global ambassadorship to the Brook. And Monty went to India in fall of 2014 on a big trip that Brooke hosted. And I wonder if you might have any advice for Nick now that he's newly crowned as ambassador, another global ambassador for the Brook, and maybe explain a little bit about that organization.
Well, I don't have to give Nick any advice. Nick's doing what Nick does, and that's all part of it. But I would say that if you can give, a little bit of time each year to the work of the Brook, it means they'll take you to a third world country like India or to Pakistan or down to South America somewhere, where you will see things being done with donkeys and horses and mules that is just despicable. And it's not that these people, you know, they don't have any money, they don't want to do bad things, but these poor animals are really in trouble in a lot of parts of the world. And a young guy like you can be a huge influence to the next generation. I'm trying to pull more females into hands-on with the animals, because females tend to be less aggressive about their actions with the animals than the men do. And the Brook is a worthwhile cause, and I just encourage you to be the best ambassador you can.
Yeah, I mean, look, I obviously feel very blessed to be able to be a part of it. When the opportunity came about, I didn't think twice about it. I read a lot about what they did and what their vision and what they're, and it really is a great, it's something that's obviously animals in general are something that's close to my heart. Horses is my workhorse. I can imagine what happens in third world countries. First and foremost, what I've always to tell them was I'd love to really get to travel over to one of the India or Pakistan and to really experience it firsthand, because that's where you really gain you really get that emotional side of it, and that you really get that feeling because as you well know, Monty, Wellington it's also horses, but it's a totally different
It's a different world.
It's a totally different. It's a different world, right? Exactly.
It's a different world.
you know, all the horses live like kings, and
yeah.
You know, they're all well nourished, and I mean, we don't have any issues here.
Nick, let me tell you that when I was in India, I went to one location where I could stand on top of a hill there, and I could see 8,000 horses in front of me. 8,000 horses. And every horse, Nick, every horse was tied to the ground by his head. No trees, no buildings.
Wow.
Every horse was tied to the ground by his head and to the ground by one hind foot. Every horse.
I can't imagine. I mean, that's unfathomable.
Unbelievable. And so, yeah. You know, the people don't want to do wrong. They do what tradition tells them to do, and they do it the way Daddy did it. And
And education, you know, they're not educated. They don't, I mean, that's the sad part is, you know, they don't know how to take care of the horses. And most of the time, they're not able to take care of the horses.
Yeah, I try not to blame anybody, but just to try to guide them through to a better way.
Right.
Well, this has been fun, Debbie.
This is
awesome.
You two are such a gift to us. Thank you for sharing together today, and we would love to follow up and see how your year goes in 2016, Nick, and have you two chat it up and see where we can
I'd love to do that, and I'd love to hopefully see you guys and me in person, hopefully one day. If you're ever over on the East Coast, please let us know. And you know, it's been an honor to speak to you, Monty, and
honor to speak with you. Yeah. And best of luck, and welcome to the world of making the world better for horses.
That's nice.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Whisper the language of the herd. Listen, you don't have to say a word.
It's time for Jamie Jennings to fetch an email from Monty Roberts' inbox and share a morsel of Monty's wisdom in a little segment we like to call Ask Monty.
Leave this world a better place than mine. The magic in the language of the herd.
I attended a 4-day clinic at Flags Up Farms to become familiar with your techniques and have been starting all of our babies successfully now for 6 years. Recently, we have been breeding Irish sport horses in addition to our thoroughbreds, and I've discovered that the ISH Irish sport horse does not have a particularly strong flight instinct. The problem that I now encounter is that all of the babies will exhibit all four signals within a couple of laps around the pen, and usually without even cantering. I can startle them into moving away initially, but it can be difficult to keep them moving without chasing them, which makes them leery of join-up. If I don't chase them, they will join up and follow, but not well because they've exhausted the flight instinct. I've experimented with moving on to saddle, rider, etc. more quickly, but have found that mentally they are not really ready for this either. I believe this is due to the fact that I have a less than successful join up. Your method has worked really well, and we have produced many lovely riding horses as a result, so we hope that we can transfer this process to our ISH babies with as much success. Monty's answers. I am pleased to hear that these methods are working for you, and especially that you are producing champions. I suppose it's possible that you are worrying about things of lesser importance than you need to. I work with many ISH on my tours, and I find them to be quite normal within the realm of equus. If I have a horse that is exhibiting lower flight tendencies than I am comfortable with, I will often use a plastic shopping bag on a long bamboo cane to increase their flight response. When I feel I have what I want, I simply toss it out over the fence and proceed without the bag. You might try this, but it sounds like you are doing well as it is. It is commendable that you're working to improve your relationship with your horses and understand their nature better. I am certain that as you add numbers to your experience bank, you will look back at this question with a chuckle. The problem you cite is certainly not one of deep concern, but I find it interesting that you place importance on the breed you're working with. Certainly, there are differences as we journey through the many breeds the equine world has to offer. However, it is my opinion that the similarities far outweigh the differences. I find the ISH to be a wonderful breed. They are filled with athletic ability and generosity as well. Because of their heterozygous background, they are blessed with what the geneticists would call hybrid vigor. Without going into a full genetics lesson, let me briefly explain to you that thoroughbreds, Arabs, and other breeds that have existed in a pure form for prolonged periods of time, centuries, have a more consistent gene pool and are termed trending towards homozygous. Geneticists agree that pure forms of any particular breed possess less hybrid vigor than those of a more recent origin, which are more tending towards heterozygous. The warmbloods of the world, including the Irish Sport Horse, are the result of recent outcrosses to the mix of bloodlines of the cooler draft breeds with those of established thoroughbreds. These horses tend to have a more vigorous physiology. They will generally have healthier feet and stronger bones than the older breeds. They also tend to have more laid-back attitudes. Physiologically as well as physically, they are generally less fragile than their purebred cousins. The ISH Irish Sport Horse is extremely intelligent and highly trainable, and if we get it right with these horses, they will become exceptionally gentle and often great mounts for the children of the horse world. I encourage you to continue your work with your ISH and believe that you will ultimately return to me with reports of great successes.
For more of these insights into good horsemanship, go to www.montyroberts.com and click on the orange banner that says Get Free Horse Tips.
Hi, I'm Monty Roberts, and I'm dedicated to training horses without pain. You can learn to do it too on my Equus Online University. Western, English, the beginner, or the advanced rider, it doesn't matter. You can connect with other students online too on our forum, and there's a new lesson every week. It's a lifetime of learning for you on my Equus Online University. At MontyRoberts.com.
What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?
Where in the world is Monty Roberts?
Monty is looking forward to meeting some new friends, two-legged and four-legged, in England, March 5th, 11th, and 19th. And then he pops over to Denmark on April 9th. Then he heads to Germany, April 24, April 23, April 30th. And then he goes to Austria, May 5th, and then May 7th. And then he goes to South Africa. If he hasn't gone far enough, he goes all the way to South Africa on May 28 and 29. He'll be in Johannesburg. And then in on June 4 and 5, those are two different events on the weekends there, he'll be in Cape Town. And I'm going to join him there. It's too good a trip to pass up. And then in July, 17th through the 21st, he has a special training with a translation in Portuguese. That's for our Brazilian and Portuguese friends. And on August 1st through 5th, he has a Monty special training at Flag Is Up Farms in California. And it's in English. Yay. And then August 22 through September 2nd is the Gentling Wild Horses courses that Ben and Monty talked about in the episode. And that's the one that Jamie Jennings attended last summer. And we'll probably be seeing some more wild Mustangs in that offing as well.
Woohoo! All about the Mustangs.
It is. Yep.
For details about today's show, no, you don't have to remember them all. You can go to horsemanshipradio.com where we'll have links and we'll have some pictures and more information about our guests. And we love to hear from you. We love feedback. Please follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/Monty Roberts and Monty Roberts tweets. That's right. He is on Twitter at twitter.com/Monty_Roberts. And many thanks to our sponsors because they make this show possible. That would be IFA, Omega Fields, and Monty Roberts University.
Yes, and be sure to visit all the other great shows, too, on the Horse Radio Network at www.horseradionetwork.com. Until next time, have many happy horse hours.